Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, September the 9th, as we like to do on Sundays. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We have so much to get into today. You wouldn't believe what my yellow pad looks like. It's just like I don't have any empty space. I mean, there is so much to get into. We'll talk about what happened at the U.S. Open. I thought it was an embarrassing night for Serena Williams and for the whole staff there at the U.S. Open. This young woman from Japan should have been treated like a winner, not like someone who upset Serena's plans. The New York Times had a no-opinion piece this week. I don't know. We'll talk a little bit about that. My guess is that this is not that high of a person, but, you know, I could be wrong. The American economy is doing absolutely great. The numbers that we're seeing are just fabulous numbers that go back many, many years. The generic polls that we're seeing are all over the map. You know, the one last week, it was plus 14 for the Democrats. Now we see some plus 4, plus 5, even one plus 2. I'm beginning to wonder if anybody has a clue as to what's going to happen. North Korea is in the news. Sweden is in the news. They had an election today. I don't know if there are any results, but expectations are that the right wing is going to do a lot better. The Democrats are moving so far to the left. It is absolutely crazy. There's a woman running for governor or in the primary in New York, Cynthia Nixon, who basically says, let's pass Medicare for all and then we'll figure out how to pay it later. I mean, it's just as irresponsible as it can be. President Obama is back in the news, gave a speech that I thought was pretty pretty silly, pretty depressing. Just another crazy week. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, we're getting a lot of rain here, but other than that, everything's great. How about New York?
Well, New York is right now talking about two things. One is the disgraceful behavior of Americans at the U.S.
Yes.
Open. And the second is the fact that there is a hurricane in the Atlantic. And this gives enormous opportunities to so-called weather forecasters and the ad men who run the television networks, because as soon as a hurricane appears on the radar scope, ratings go up on the television stations because the weathercasters give you the worst possible scenario. Now, they're saying, well, it's just turned into a hurricane again, and it's approaching the east coast of the United States, and by Thursday it may be a Category 4, and we're not saying it's the end of the world, but certainly close, and you'll want to get to those stores and buy all those Eveready batteries, you know, that you bought 4 years ago for the last hurricane that didn't hit, and we're going to have a week like that. You can just kind of predict it, and we, you know, we hope it goes away, as it usually does. But I'm always amused as these hurricanes approach at the apocalyptic talk of weather forecasters, knowing full well that they're boosting the ratings every time they tell us that the world is about to come to an end.
And probably selling a few batteries, too, I would think, in the process. You mentioned New York, Bill, and the tennis, U.S. Open tennis. Why don't we begin with that? Because there's a couple of interesting things happening in New York. You had Cynthia Nixon, who's challenging Governor Cuomo for the governor in the primary, and she made a statement about passing Medicare. If I was Cuomo, though, I wouldn't take it for granted, because look what happened in Massachusetts. Look what happened in that other Bronx district. I mean, this might end up being a lot closer than they think, just because of all the energy on that side of the scale, Bill.
Well, that's it. She has every minority and specialized group with a name and an office somewhere on her side. Andrew Cuomo was not a particularly popular man. He's not, you know, he, no one rushes to a hall to hear Andrew Cuomo. But the reality is, if Cynthia Nixon wins, so what? If she wins, she will be governor. Because the Republican Party in New York is run from a country club somewhere. I think it's still Richard Nixon's son-in-law who's the head. I think they have a dinner occasionally where they get dressed up and they go to the, get their tuxedos cleaned once a year. And that's basically it. There's no candidate to oppose her. And here in New York, we elected a socialist mayor named de Blasio, who has destroyed everything he's touched, was reelected easily. And the Republicans barely run a race. They never heard of the name Rudy Giuliani, who proved that a Republican can be elected mayor of New York. The party is so pathetic. They've just given up. Republicans, I was just reading a column about that. The traditional Republican view of politics is it's our duty to lose. You know, don't rock the boat too much. And so Cynthia, look, she could score an upset, in which case the press will go completely crazy. Now, the one in Massachusetts and the one in New York were both entirely predictable. The girl who won in New York, I can never remember her name, but the turnout was 13% in that primary in New York. She beat an old war horse who had long ago lost any contact with his district. She's bright. She's very attractive. And she won with actually only 8% of registered Democrats. And the press portrayed this as a great national victory. It was not. It was a local affair. And if she were ugly and looked like Woody Allen preaching socialism, the story would have been over in a day. Now, as far as the one in Massachusetts, same story. It's a changing district. It is a minority district now. The guy who was defeated was actually as far to the left as the woman who won, but she was black. And you got to talk about that. I mean, it's the old story of going to the polls and electing the sister. And there was nothing unusual that was Massachusetts. Now, in Delaware, where you had a statewide race, and Senator Carper was up for reelection, the Democratic moderate senator, there was an opponent who was both, I believe, black and a trans person or an LGBT person. That's the way she and the reporters were all huffing and puffing. They were hanging around the capital of Delaware Tuesday night, expecting another possible upset, and the country, you know, going into nirvana. And the fact is, the Carper won easily. Most of these cases and most of these races are actually won by moderate Democrats, but that isn't the big. That's not the big story. There's no story there. So they've ginned up this whole left-wing progressive thing. Barack Obama, who was president at one time, spoke today in California under the sponsorship of some George Soros organization, and he drew 750 people. I mean, if this were Donald Trump, the stadium would have been filled. And that's difference. I mean, I'm no great lover of Trump's personality, but I was saying to somebody just an hour ago, if Trump were debating Obama, if they had a great debate on the same platform, television coverage and all, every single commentator would say we are about to see Donald Trump being smashed into history by Barack. It would be exactly the opposite. Trump would win it in 10 seconds. Because as rough and coarse as he is, he makes one good point after another, and he talks about results, and he gets the results. And people have come to realize that. They don't like him personally. He's not the kind of guy you bring home to your mother. But the fact of the matter is that he is effective. Now, he is running about, well, I think Rasmussen had him back at 48%. On Friday, he began the week very badly, I think because of the McCain funeral. Then he came up again. He's running probably about 43-44%, about where Barack Obama ran at this point in his presidency. And the question is, he is going to be out, he said, for 40 days on the campaign trail. The question is, can he bring that Republican vote out? A midterm is a turnout election. It all depends on turnout. And the Democrats are clearly fired up this year. Republicans have got to be fired up, and he has got to emphasize go to the polls. Otherwise, you're going to lose everything we've gained. If the Democrats, because the Democrats take over the House, I almost want them to so they can destroy themselves. Because that's exactly
what's
going to happen.
Yes, I know what you
mean. Yeah.
Yes, I think you're exactly right.
Yeah,
they're going to go so far crazy that they're going to end up basically giving it back 2 years later. But wanted to talk a little bit, Bill, about what happened in New York. In the interest of full disclosure, I am not a fan of tennis. I don't watch tennis matches or championships. It's not my thing. It's just not for me. And I'm even less interested in the ladies' U.S. Open. And I mean no disrespect to the very talented players. It's just not something I enjoy watching. But I couldn't help but overhear about what happened in the final, where Serena Williams threw a temper tantrum, and then when the presentation of the trophy or the championship, whatever they do, the young woman from Japan who won was treated very poorly, I thought, by not just the fans, but by the leadership of the Tennis Association, almost saying, gee, let's apologize for the fact that Serena won. I mean, it's very sad to see that happen. I mean, this young woman, all she did was win the match, Bill.
Well, I think this was a dark day for America. The behavior of American fans, who, by the way, usually are gracious. That's the interesting thing about it. You know, they made the point that in matches, hockey matches between the United States and Canada, when the Canadian anthem is played, American fans are always respectful. When the national anthem of the United States is played, Canadian fans are sometimes not. We usually are very gracious to competitors, but this time it was about race. And that is what discourages me. The head of the U.S. Tennis Association is African-American. She apparently saw it as a racial moment, and she trashed the Japanese girl who won fair and square and played with a sportsmanlike attitude. Serena Williams was obnoxious. She behaved horribly. She didn't play that well, and she lost. You lose, you lose. You lose graciously, you congratulate the winner. But now she is going to take that story back to Japan. Now, my feeling is it would be a wonderful gesture for the President of the United States to apologize to the Prime Minister of Japan for the behavior of these people. I don't know who was in the crowd at the U.S. Open to boo the Japanese player.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's usually a pretty tame crowd at tennis.
Right, usually for tennis, you're exactly right. For tennis, it's usually a pretty nice, polite crowd. I mean, they're there to see the match, and they're usually pretty polite, but I don't know. I was very disappointed with the way this young woman was treated. Now, maybe Serena Williams has apologized to her. I don't know. It would be nice if she did.
She's
put this behind us. No, probably not. But it was also, it wasn't just a bad night for this young woman and the Tennis Association. All of this happened on ESPN, which is, I don't know. That used to be a sports network, Bill.
No, it isn't
now
anymore.
I don't even know what they do anymore.
Well, they're a left-wing network. I mean, this is it has hurt them, but they don't care. You know, there was just an article I was reading a short bit ago about the decision by Nike to put Colin Kaepernick on as their spokesman. And the author of the article, who knows business, was saying they make a calculated decision that they're going to antagonize a certain number of people, but they will attract more in certain communities. And apparently Nike sales are actually up. You know, all the left-wingers and people of certain groups are going to the stores to buy their Nikes to show their solidarity. And their attitude is there are more of them than there are people protesting. Well, I'm not so sure of that in the long run.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. Now, they're also saying that this is popular overseas and that they have a big market overseas as well. That could be
it
true.
It probably is. Yeah.
But I personally don't – I mean, look, we've talked about this before, but my feeling has always been that if I have a business, the last thing I want to do is get into politics. I'm in the business of doing whatever. I'm in the business of selling shoes, selling services, whatever it is. That's my business, and if people want to go political, they do that on their own time, but not on my name. And so I think it's going to be a mistake for Nike. We're starting to see, Bill, maybe a lot of this stuff piling up, and that's why I'm beginning to think there's a backlash out there coming, and whether it's this November or later, but people are just fed up with all of this. Everything is sexism. Everything is racism. And it seems like the reality gets lost, Bill. I mean, look, the reason Colin Kaepernick got benched is because he was throwing interceptions.
Yes.
You don't have to be a big football fan to know that that's something that the coach doesn't like. You know, if you're throwing interceptions, you're not going to play, Bill.
Of course. But today, Billie Jean King was out endorsing Serena Williams' behavior, saying, well, it's all sexism because if a man had done this, he would be called outspoken. That's not true. When John McEnroe behaved that way, he was called out for it many, many times. People like good behavior. They really do. Mm-hmm. But you're right about that, and you say, you know, when there is a backlash, there already is a backlash. There's been a backlash for years, but the fact is, and something we on our side have to face is, that there's plenty of support for this kind of bad behavior because that is what kids are being taught in schools. That he's standing up for democracy. He's standing up for his people. He's doing this. He's doing that. You know, somebody wrote today in a column, and I wish I remember who because it was such an excellent column, that this kind of behavior that Colin Kaepernick engaged in is encouraged in colleges. You know, we've had colleges where libraries and classrooms have been broken into by protesters, professors have been harassed, and when people say that is an outrage in a university, they say, well, they're simply exercising their right to protest, which is not true. But many feel that way. You've got a whole generation of millennials, or losers as I call them, who really don't believe, they don't really believe in democracy. Democracy to them is what happens when they win. If they win, it's democracy. If somebody else wins, it must be a conspiracy. And that's what they're being taught. And you add to that a number of people around the country who still accept this notion that you go to the polls and vote for your group. I mean, Rahm Emanuel has now withdrawn as a candidate for mayor for a third term. And the first things you heard out of the mouths of some potentials were, it's time for another black mayor. Who cares what the color of the mayor is, as long as the mayor does the job for the people and does it well. It's just dismaying to see this people constantly going back to identity politics. It is very destructive.
It's killing us. I think it's killing us as a country because it's dividing people. I mean, I don't know what side has more people, but I do think it is dividing the country in a very bad way. It has also put us in a situation where you cannot have a discussion about race. If you say, for example, that the out of wedlock number in the black community is too high, then immediately people call you a racist. Rather than wanting to have a discussion with you about a very legitimate issue, they automatically call you a racist or a sexist or whatever. And I think it's pulling us apart. At a time when I think, Bill, a little conversation, some mutual honest conversation would do the country a lot of good. But if I may just jump for a second here, look what happened in Atlanta. The mayor of Atlanta has decided to go basically shut down ICE by not allowing jails in the city of Atlanta to take anybody from ICE. Now, I thought we fought a civil war to prevent cities or states from avoiding a federal law, Bill. I mean, that's what I thought the Civil War was about.
That's right.
And here you have it right back, Bill.
Yes, and what you have is a mayor effectively doing a George Wallace. I mean, standing
right
in the schoolhouse door and saying, we will not abide by the law. Now, President Eisenhower, in 1957, was confronted with a governor in Arkansas named Orville Forbes, who refused to enforce a desegregation decision. And President Eisenhower sent in federal troops. And they weren't National Guardsmen either. They were real, hardened paratroopers. And the order was to escort the children into school and get the job done. And he did. And the governor backed down eventually. That is what is required.
You have to do it with sanctuary cities. At some point, you have to say, we're going in and we're sending, whether it's the troops or the marshals, maybe troops would be too much here, but maybe not. But you're sending in marshals and you're saying, these guys are going to enforce immigration law and we're going to arrest any of the city officials who stand in our way. And I think if you do that a couple of times, that might just change a few of these politically motivated decisions like this one in Atlanta, which is just crazy. I mean, I don't know. I'm just very disappointed with the Democrat leaders, Bill, because this is all politically motivated. You know that.
Oh,
it's all about
it
pandering to groups. But nobody – what really bothers me is nobody's asking what impact this has on black Americans. Maybe that's why Trump's support is up. Because when these are criminals for the most part who are being arrested by ICE. They're not arresting some grandmother who's walking down to the grocery store. They're arresting criminals. And who are they a threat to? Well, the people who live in the inner city, many of them Mexicans, Hispanics, or blacks, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely correct. Some of these public officials, minority officials, believe they're representing their people. And one of the reasons is that many in the African American community are afraid to speak out publicly express their real beliefs. If, for example, tomorrow President Trump were to federalize elements of the Illinois National Guard, MP companies, send them into Chicago and say, make certain that every black child gets to school safely and gets home safely, there will be an uproar of unbelievable proportions among black leaders and among the political left. He's turning it into a dictatorship. It's fascism. Mm-hmm. He's Hitler. But if you would ask privately black people in Chicago what they think, I'll bet they'd have a completely different reaction. They'd say, bring in the troops. Black people don't like to see their children killed. They really don't.
No, they don't.
But those children are unimportant. We have an organization called Black Lives Matter. Well, which Black Lives Matter? What have they ever done to save one black life? It seems sometimes that Black Lives Matter only if it affects the career of a politician. And if the president did that, and I think we're approaching that point, it will happen. Some have formally asked for it. There's a black pastor in Chicago who has openly asked for Trump to send in federal troops. It's been done before. President Johnson sent troops into Detroit. I think troops were sent into other cities to enforce order. And I think you may see it. And when you see it, I think that some of the left-wing leaders in this country are going to be in for the shock of their lives. Those troops will be greeted with cheers.
Well, they should be, Bill, because as you indicated, the people who are being killed, you know, it's not that the KKK is not going into Chicago on the weekends and killing black people.
That's right.
It's unfortunately black on black, and it's pathetic, you know, when you wake up Monday morning and you see the headline, 6 people killed over the weekend, you know, including a 2-year-old who just happened to be, you know, outside in her mother's arms while, you know, bullets were flying. So I agree with you. I agree totally with you. I think it's time for President Trump or maybe the Attorney General to say enough is enough. Federal law is going to be enforced in some of these cities. Bill, let me take a little break. When we come back, we'll get into the New York Times. We'll talk about the economy and a few other things going on in the country. We'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and as we like to do on Sundays, we're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to get into a couple of big stories. The American economy is doing extremely well, but before we do, let's talk about the New York Times and the Bob Woodward book and everything else going on related to that. Bill, you know the New York Times published this no-name opinion piece. And, I mean, look, I don't know what the rules of journalism are. It's a free country. I guess you can do whatever you want. But if I'm the editor of a major newspaper like the New York Times and I'm going to take a step like this, I better have somebody, who wrote that when the name comes out, everybody goes, yeah, he's really a senior White House official. And, so it's a big gamble for the New York Times, isn't it, Bill?
Well, it's a big gamble, except, of course, for their readership, which thinks it's wonderful. We're speaking truth to power. But the fact of the matter is that it is a disgrace to journalism. I mean, I don't know who this person is, but, you know, in the case of Watergate, there was a similar thing called Deep Throat, you remember. Deep Throat mm-hmm. was the informant yeah. who informed, but it was the information Deep Throat was providing was passed through Woodward and Bernstein, mm-hmm. and we didn't have whistleblower laws at the time. I don't believe, and theoretically at least, Woodward and Bernstein were vetting what he said. This is a case of a man who joined an administration, and you assume a certain amount of loyalty on the part of a public official working for a president. The tradition is you can disagree, you can protest, you can say internally what you wish, but once the policy is made, if you don't agree with it and can't accept it, you resign in protest. But you don't do this. You don't knife the president in the back. The Times assures us that this is a senior government official. I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. It may be a person that in their mind is senior. You know, maybe he's the senior guy who fills the staplers every morning. I don't know. But he didn't say anything new. I mean, these comments about the president were made all the time. Comments about the president's governing style are made all the time. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, and this was not widely discussed, is that Nikki Haley, who is wonderful, wrote a response to this in the Washington Post, saying that's not the president I know. He said he surrounds himself with people who disagree. We have a debate, and the policy is then made. But this individual you got to ask the question, if you knew the name of this individual, would you ever trust that person again on anything? And the answer mm-hmm. is no. I know that in the business that I come from, with some of them, like show business, there's a lot of betrayal and a lot of this kind of thing. And I once asked a guy who got a piece of inside information, would you ever trust the person who gave this to you? He said no. I know if he's willing mm-hmm. to cheat on somebody else, he's going to cheat on me. And that's the problem with people like this. Once their names are exposed, they're finished. Now, I don't know if this guy's name, assuming it's a guy, it might be a woman, will ever be exposed. We may never know. I suspect books will be written about it, and maybe toward the end of this person's life, he or she will reveal that he was the person. Deep Throat did reveal who he was. It was mm-hmm. one of the FBI officials. Maybe the name will come out. But God knows, if I were a newspaper, I would never trust a person like this,
mm-hmm.
a person willing to do this kind of thing.
But didn't Deep Throat, I know he came out eventually. He was living in San Diego, I think, with his sister, and he was dying. But wasn't there money involved with it, that they wanted to make some money of a book or something, and that had something to do with Deep Throat coming out? Because by the time Deep Throat came out, I don't think anybody really cared about Watergate, Bill.
That's true. That I don't know. I don't remember that part of it. But he came out. The story was over. I've always said Richard Nixon was not brought down by Watergate. Richard Nixon was brought down because he was Richard Nixon. Watergate mm-hmm. was the proximate cause. Somebody found an excuse. But Richard Nixon was brought down very much because he didn't have that much support in his own party. He had won 49 states. And in the Republican Party, winning elections never mattered. You know, I don't know. For years, they felt it was their duty to lose, and there is still that mentality in the Republican Party. The Republican Party was very serious about Watergate. They took it seriously. They investigated. Howard Baker, a major Republican figure, became famous for his sense of responsibility in conducting a good investigation. But I've always believed that. Had it been any other president, had it been Jack Kennedy, it would have been on page 46 of the newspaper, if that. And it was just the dislike of Richard Nixon. Now, that can be said of Trump as well. He's hated on the Democratic side and not terribly liked on the Republican side. He's kind of an interloper who won elections. And if the Democrats win the House, I think Trump will be impeached. I think the Congressional Black Caucus will demand it. And then it will go to the Senate. And then the question is, you need two-thirds to remove. And in the case of Bill Clinton, who was impeached, they couldn't find those two-thirds. I mean, and he actually did violate the law in a serious way. He committed perjury. But they would refuse to remove him from office. I don't know what would happen to Trump. Trump, I assume, would have the backing of the Republican Party, and that he would not be removed from office. But you never know with these things.
Well, it depends on the evidence, Bill. I think it depends on the evidence and how strong the evidence is. I think in the case of Richard Nixon, as I recall and have read in, you know, since, that, you know, there was some tangible evidence, those tapes and all of that. In the case of President Trump, if Mr. Mueller has evidence, we haven't seen it. So I think it depends a little bit on the evidence, but I don't know, Bill. I think a lot of Americans have sort of tuned out this stuff in the sense that they're saying, hey, call me when you've got something. But in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy the economy. We're seeing economic numbers, Bill, economic statistics that are just absolutely unbelievable. I mean, the unemployment claims going back to 1969. I mean, some of these numbers are just absolutely incredible. And, you know, you can dislike Trump, but these numbers, I think, make up for a lot of that dislike, Bill. I mean, I'm not crazy about Trump's personality either. I didn't support him in the primaries, and there's lots and lots of times when he tweets and he drives me crazy sometimes. I confess that. But, man, these results are amazing.
He's also getting results in foreign policy.
Well, that's it, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But it reminds me a little bit, Bill, of that story of President Lincoln and General Grant and the whiskey story, where somebody was indignant, you know, that General Grant was drinking too much whiskey. And, Lincoln, I think, said something like, hey, what's he drinking? Let's get him more or whatever. So I don't know. You know, I don't mean to represent the country, but I get the feeling from talking to people that everybody's just tired of this nonsense. That, you know, either show me a violation of the law or let the guy alone. You can always run against him in 2020, but just let the guy govern, Bill.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think that's what the American people want. I don't think that the American people would support an impeachment. They didn't in Bill Clinton's case. And Clinton wasn't all that loved, but they just didn't feel there was enough there to remove a president. The standard is high crimes and misdemeanors. And, of course, the impeachment failed. The Republicans got less popular, not more. I suspect the Democrats will do pretty well in this election, but they usually outside party usually does. But if they start impeachment instead of attending to their business, there may be a backlash against them immediately.
Well, and only a couple of years later, of course, they have to defend the House were they to win, and I think you're exactly right. Now, there's also a book by Bob Woodward. I have to confess that I've never read any of his books, including All the President's Men. I've never read them. I have no reason to dislike Bob Woodward, but I just don't like these books written where you don't know who said what. I just don't like them. Maybe it's the way investigative reporting is done. Maybe that's the way it is. But these books that say, well, you know, somebody told me this, somebody told me that, I just don't like them, Bill. I just don't. I just think they're unfair on whoever you're accusing, Bill.
Well, you know, what he's doing is picking up on a strain of American history, which is actually quite traditional, and that is people like to trash the president. People forget that Abraham Lincoln was called the baboon by his first commanding general, who then ran against him in 1864. That was McClellan, George McClellan. And people felt that, Lincoln felt, McClellan had a very good chance of winning. But along came William Tecumseh Sherman and saved Lincoln by his march through the South. And people realized the Civil War was being won, and Lincoln was reelected. President Roosevelt, Franklin D. Roosevelt, was called all kinds of things, including by his allies, who turned against him on the third term issue, who turned against him on the packing of the Supreme Court. There is a memo written by Raymond Mollet, who was part of Roosevelt's brain trust, basically saying the same things about Roosevelt that were said about George W. Bush, that he was an empty head, that he didn't know anything, and this was one of his closest advisors. I mean, for goodness sake, Harry Truman was called the little man from Missouri. He was known to curse a great deal. It was also known that many of the letters he wrote as president never reached their destination because his staff just tore them up because they were so irrational. He had that side to him. He was also brash and outspoken. In 1952, when Richard Nixon ran as vice president on the Eisenhower ticket, he promised to bring good language back to the White House. I mean, that was actually a major campaign theme. You get the comments that were made about George W. Bush. There wasn't much said about Trump. That wasn't said about George W. Bush. It was the same theme. He's not a legitimate president. He's stupid. He doesn't know anything. He's juvenile. Basically, that is the Republican, the Democratic line these days. And, of course, Reagan, must we remember Reagan? He was called an amiable dunce. The press portrayed him as a man who would start World War III. In fact, he ended the Cold War on peaceful terms. But he was, he's not qualified to be president. Why, he's too stupid. And he's got all these businessmen around him. This is a theme of American history. And I don't know why our so-called journalists, who seem to think that history began 2 weeks ago, maybe three if they're old enough, don't realize that this is not an unusual occurrence. These books, the gossip, Thomas Jefferson was the victim of terrible gossip and viciousness. There were all kinds of... who was the president? Was it Grover Cleveland, who was suspected of having an illegitimate child?
Cleveland did have a baby in the White House, but I thought it was Warren Harding, wasn't it, who was accused of that at one time?
No, it was in the 19th century, and somebody wrote a poem, "Ma, Ma, Where's My Pa? Gone to the White House, ha, ha, ha." I mean, this is not uncommon.
Well, of course, what makes it different now is the social media and the fact that this can be, back then it was, you know, you had to distribute it through newspapers or pamphlets or whatever, or word of mouth. Now with social media, I mean, this stuff can hit the fan, and it's going all over the world. But let's talk a little bit about President Obama, Bill, as you indicated, and then we'll talk about foreign policy a little bit later. But as you indicated, he came back on Friday. I thought he picked a very bad day to talk about the economy, because, I mean, we were getting some amazing numbers from the American economy on Friday. So I thought he picked a bad day. But for him to, you know, it's almost like he was saying, you know, gee, I started all of this. He's just lucky that, you know, I threw the pass and he caught it. I mean, it's just, I thought it was unpresidential. I don't ever remember George W. Bush, and I'm sure there were many times when George W. Bush probably wanted to get up and say something, but you know, he didn't. He didn't do it. Reagan didn't do it to anybody. The first Bush didn't do it to anybody either. And I just feel like, you know, this is a side of President Obama, not his better side. I'll put it that way, Bill. When, you know, you said he was speaking in front of an empty audience. I don't know how many people he's reaching, but I have a theory. I think this is all about getting out the black vote, because I think Democrats are starting to worry about the black vote. I mean, you mentioned that only 700 people went to see President Obama in California, but I thought there was a blue wave, Bill. Wasn't there a blue wave? I mean, I would have expected thousands of people to show up, all these excited Democrats show up to see. So, I mean, what happened to the blue wave? There's something going on with President Obama that makes no sense. I think he would have been better off just saying nothing, Bill.
I agree. I think Americans resent it when former presidents impose themselves on politics. Now, it's not completely unprecedented. I mean, President Eisenhower spoke at the 1964 Republican Convention, but a convention is something else. It is, you know, he was the head of the party, and he denounced the press. Ironically, he referred to sensation-seeking columnists. And all the people in the convention turned around and shook their fists at the broadcast booths, kind of the beginning of the anti-media campaign. And yes, former presidents have spoken out about politics, but I think going out on the campaign trail the way Obama is doing right now is if not unprecedented, it's unusual, and people want the former president to be above that, not to endorse candidates. George W. Bush was the model of what a former president is. Others have maintained their silence. Now, Bill Clinton has been very active, but it's interesting, not so much in a partisan way, even though he makes speeches that are clearly on the Democratic side. But Obama, I think the fact that he only got 750 people tells us something. He's really not that popular as a presidential figure. He's popular as a personal figure and as the symbol of a racial breakthrough, which we should all applaud. But as a president, I think they see the difference between a president who is effective in Trump, even though they may not like him, and a president who's ineffective, as in Obama, who was well-liked but clearly did not really accomplish very much in his 8 years in office. I think it's an absolutely fascinating picture. Now, what the race that interests me most in the country right now, at least, is the Texas senatorial race,
which
this really airhead Beto, or as they're now calling him correctly, Bob O'Rourke, an Irishman posing as a Hispanic by taking on the name Beto, which is not even his name. And yet the left-wing press, apparently in Texas, loves him. He makes all these kind of 1960s-type statements. He doesn't seem to know very much, but he's very lovable. So there is a feeling that because Ted Cruz is not lovable, which is absolutely true, that Beto may score a major upset, in which case, as soon as his victory is announced, which I hope never comes, but it may come, he will be a candidate for president for 2020. And he scares me because he really is an empty head.
Right. Well, yes, I mean, we're obviously in the middle of that down here. He ran into a little trouble with the VFW, which is a very popular group down here. And how much damage that will do to him, I don't know. I do hear a couple of things locally that, you know, I keep hearing, you know, just from talking to people, that number one, he has a lot of money, but he doesn't have a lot of experience. The staff is not that experienced. Mm. And they don't really, you know, they're not sure how the staff is going to handle things like the VFW incident, which I felt was pretty stupid to let that happen here in Texas. He's very popular everywhere, Bill, but I still think that Cruz is going to win, and it's not going to be close. I just think that once this thing gets into issues, it's interesting that Beto O'Rourke, or Robert O'Rourke, didn't want to do a debate. He was challenging, you know, back in April, he was challenging Ted Cruz to, like, a bunch of debates, including two in Spanish, which is kind of crazy because neither one speaks Spanish. Yeah. But apparently now he doesn't want to debate Cruz. I mean, they're negotiating and they're stalling. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have a debate. I think if they had a debate, Ted Cruz is going to make him look really bad because Robert O'Rourke is really not that bright. He's not that bright. He's not that sharp, Bill.
He really isn't. He's an imitation Bobby Kennedy, and I think was groomed for that. His name is Robert Francis O'Rourke. Bobby Kennedy's name was Robert Francis Kennedy, and he combs his hair the same way. He acts the same way, I think that once the bloom is off the rose, and I hope it is. That Ted Cruz, who is, I know, not popular personally and not popular in the press, but is one of the most brilliant members of the Senate and a real constitutionalist. I mean, he really, you know, Alan Dershowitz was his teacher at Harvard Law, and he says that while he disagrees with Cruz, he was one of the most brilliant students he ever had. And the Senate can use true intellectuals like that. And if the people of Texas reject Cruz, I think they will be making a terrible mistake.
Well, the reason I think he's going to win, Bill, there's a couple of reasons I think it's not going to be an issue. I don't think Robert O'Rourke is going to be our next senator, but there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, Governor Abbott is topping the ticket. And Governor Abbott is as popular as any governor has been here. So he's going to get a huge victory over Lupe Valdez, a victory that I anticipate anywhere plus 15 points. I mean, he beat Wendy Davis by 18. I wouldn't be surprised if the victory is similar to that. So if he were to win, let's just say he gets 15 points, and he wins by 15 points, which would be I guess 57-42, something like that. Most of the people voting for Governor Abbott are not going to vote for Robert O'Rourke. So I just think that Abbott is leading the charge here, and I think that's going to help Cruz a great deal. The other point that I like to make is going back to numbers. In March, in the primaries, Ted Cruz got 1.3 million votes in a primary without any suspense. And on the other hand, all of the Democrats together didn't reach a million votes. So if we just start from that basis, a million versus 1.3 million, I think they're going to have to register a lot of people and get a lot of excitement to make up that many votes. So I think Ted Cruz is going to win. You're right. He's not the most charming guy in the world. By the way, I wouldn't be surprised if Senator Cruz, the next time there's an appointment to the Supreme Court, if he doesn't end up in the Supreme Court, because I think that's, frankly, that would be his best place, Bill. But, you know, that's speculating on my part.
It may happen. Look, if Trump continues as president and is reelected in 2020, he's going to have at least one more Supreme Court appointment, probably two. And he has shown that he is not interested in political correctness and that he wants certain people on the court. I don't know if he would appoint Cruz. Look, Trump's comments about Cruz are going to be used by O'Rourke. We know that he's already using them, lying Ted and all the rest. And how much attention people will give to that, I don't know, because Trump has said he's going to come in and campaign for Cruz, and I think that may be very effective. I hope it is. You know, the election.
Well, we'll see.
The election is 2 months away. That's a big 2 months. This is the time that really counts. I wish the Republican Party would stop making stupid statements. The Republican chairman today said, "Well, the Democrats have more enthusiasm. Why don't you just give them the election?" The idea is to say we are enthusiastic. We're bringing our people out, and we are going to win. For God's sake, that party just works so hard to lose elections. And I think that it's going to be a very rough campaign season. I mean, I really suspect that Robert Mueller will come out with some statement during the campaign that will hurt or will be designed to hurt Trump. Whether it will have any effect, I don't know. I think the public has become so attuned to these things that, I mean, we now know the public essentially ignores what the press has to say. I think that's been shown in poll after poll. Maybe they're going to ignore a lot of other stuff and just go out and vote the way they want to vote. And that would be wonderful.
I think it all comes down, like I was saying before, to, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I mean, if Mueller has evidence that is, you know, of something very tangible that was illegal, that involves President Trump, I'll listen to it. But if it's, you know, more of these low-level people and sending somebody to jail for 14 days or whatever, I just don't think this is going to turn people. But I'll listen to Mueller. I mean, I'm willing to listen to what he has to say. But so far, he hasn't said anything worthwhile. Bill, let's talk a little bit about foreign policy, because as you indicated in the introduction, that there were some positive things that are happening on foreign policy. North Korea is back in the news. Do you think that the fellow from North Korea is moving in our direction, Bill? Is that what you think is happening?
Well, you know, they're so deceptive that you have to wait for final proof. But I thought it was interesting that the North Koreans had one of their big annual military parades today, and they did not display their long-range missiles. Now, symbolism is very important in that part of the world, and that may have been a gesture toward the United States. There is also a letter apparently on its way from Kim Jong-un. I don't know why they do letters. Didn't anyone ever hear of email? I mean, why do they actually send a letter on paper? But on its way to President Trump, the speculation, and we always emphasize speculation, is that Kim is reaffirming his wish to denuclearize, which would be wonderful if it happens. I hope it happens. We're watching it closely, but so far I have great confidence in Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State.
Right.
He's a really good guy, and so apparently there are some serious negotiations going on. Now, another thing that happened, and is conveniently ignored by much of the press, is the fact that Trump made a statement this week about aid to the Palestinian Authority in the Middle East, which we give through UN agencies. That aid has been cut off, and other aid is being cut off, and he said, no peace agreement, no aid. Now, that's the first time that's ever been done. Most American presidents come out with these bland statements about a two-state solution, and but we're negotiating with both sides. Trump has made some, done some things that are really quite remarkable, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, and you'll notice there was very little reaction in the Arab world. I think he understands what other people don't understand, and that is that the Arab-Israeli conflict is over, and that the Israelis have won, and that the Arabs accept it. They now want to do business. They want to do business with Israel now. They're tired of the solidarity. They don't like the Palestinians. I think they think the Palestinians are spoiled children. And you're getting a situation now where Trump is saying to the Palestinians, either come to the negotiating table and negotiate an agreement or else. And he may get results. I hope he does. It'll be good for the Palestinians,
Bill, and
for God's sake.
Yeah, but something else, too, that may be working, and that is that when you project strength, people actually take you seriously.
Yes.
And we may be seeing that you know, some of these countries are saying, hey, this guy's for real. You know, we cannot push this guy around. He's for real. And I think when they begin to understand that, then I think that helps whoever the president of the United States is, Bill. One quick reaction I wanted to get from you, Bill, because time's flying. There's some big changes happening at CBS. I guess the fellow who ran CBS is leaving, all
yeah.
because of all of this sexual allegations of bad conduct. And I find it interesting, Bill, all of this began the last 2 weeks of the campaign, basically to bring down President Trump, or at the time,
yes.
Donald Trump. It all
yeah.
began, you know, whether it was coordinated or not, I don't know. But every day there was a woman story in the New York Times, culminating, of course, with the famous microphone and the remark that he made about
yes.
women into that microphone. And all of this was intended to bring down President Trump, I mean, candidate Donald Trump, President Trump now. And it seems like it's all bringing down friends of the Democrats. You know, it just seems how this issue has turned around on people of the media, Democrats. You got Keith Ellison up in Minnesota with
yes.
a woman problem. All of this has turned around on the people who started it, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, the Keith Ellison story is particularly outrageous because no Republican could get away with what he is being
no.
charged with. And I think there is also a feeling about this. Look, I think bad behavior is bad behavior, and it should be punished. If women are being held, back because they won't, quote, come across, that's wrong. That's just wrong, and most Americans think it's wrong. I think the problem is that many of these charges being made against men are often motivated by other considerations, money, internal politics. I think a lot of people are finally beginning to realize we are losing in this country an awful lot of talent to these
mm-hmm.
charges, and the charges are often based on vague accusations or things that would normally be called boorish behavior. If it's boorish behavior, it should be corrected, absolutely, but you don't destroy someone's life over it. I mean, you know, the punishment fits the crime. And I do think there's a backlash against this that is building. My goodness, if you look at the talent that is being lost to these charges, Tom Brokaw 46 years ago knocked on my hotel room door
mm-hmm.
late at night. I think a lot of people, including women, are saying, gosh, you know, you don't destroy a lifetime of good work on the basis of a boorish incident. Because
right.
if that were true, 98% of the men in this world would be out of a job.
Well, and I think a lot of women are maybe seeing through some of the hypocrisy too.
Yes.
You know, that it seems like, you know, for example, in the case of Charlie Rose, there are allegations that he was naked in his office. Well, you know, if any female member of my family was working in an office and the guy, the boss or whatever, was naked in the office, I think they would talk to other women about it and feel very uncomfortable about the
yes.
place.
Yes.
And the idea that all of this was going on and none of the women around it knew or did anything about it, that I think tells you something about you know, the hypocrisy, I think, of a lot of this. But I just think the larger point is all of this started to get Trump, and Trump is the one surviving. Everybody else seems to be, all the people who were lecturing us about what, you know, Donald Trump said into a microphone in 2005, well, they're the ones who've got problems, and they're the ones who are losing their jobs, Bill.
Yes, look, it's a sordid affair. It really is. And then we come back to somebody like Keith Ellison, the deputy chairman of the Democratic National Committee, a candidate for the highest law enforcement position in Minnesota, with credible sexual misconduct charges against him, and nobody says a thing. I mean,
nobody
does.
The
hypocrisy just flows.
No, no, I agree with you, and I think you're exactly right. If he was a Republican, he'd be gone already. And he'd be gone for another reason, Bill, not just because he's a Republican, but because I think on these matters, generally, there's more decency in the Democrat and the Republican Party, that I think that there are more Republicans who say that is wrong. I remember when that issue happened, you know, with the recording of President Donald Trump at the time speaking into that microphone. There were many Republicans at the time who were very concerned. In fact, I remember...
Oh, yes.
At the time, I think it was somebody, there were some people saying, you know, Mike Pence may be our candidate by the end of this weekend, because they thought, hey, we cannot allow this to happen.
Republicans historically have been much more concerned about misconduct in their party than Democrats. I mean, if you look at what happens to a Republican in primaries who comes out, for example, and makes racial remarks or anti-Semitic remarks, he's gone the next day. In the Democratic Party, they can meet with Louis Farrakhan, and nobody says anything. I mean, it's and remember, I go back really to the 50s, and it was Republicans, people forget, who brought down Joe McCarthy. It wasn't Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, as we said earlier in the program, Republicans took Watergate very seriously. They acted with complete patriotism on those congressional committees that investigated Watergate. You don't find that on the other side. I mean, there were many great concerns about Barack Obama and his past and his beliefs, and the Republicans took it seriously, but the Democrats didn't take it seriously at all. So in terms of moral standards, there's no comparison between the two.
I agree with you, and that's something that, you know, I like the fact that the Republicans are willing to put their mouth, or whatever the expression is, walk the talk, or whatever the expression is. I mean, there are exceptions. I'm not going to say it's a perfect situation, but I think it's more likely to happen if the Republican does something, more likely to see Republicans calling for his resignation. Bill, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you again for joining us. We didn't get into Kavanaugh too much. Hopefully we can talk about that next week. But it should be an interesting week. We look forward to reading Urgent Agenda and you keeping us informed and giving us your analysis of the news. I always enjoy it a great deal, Bill.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to next week. We will have plenty to talk about.
I think so. I think we will have plenty to talk about, because I think we do every Sunday. Well, thank you again to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. As I've said many, many times, if you're not reading Urgent Agenda, you're really missing out, not just in a lot of stories, but you're missing out in some pretty good analysis that we get from Bill. Bill does a great job covering foreign policy issues that are often overlooked by the media. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.